As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
Yeah, this is Chris Marabella with Marabella Commercial Finance. This is the first teleseminar pertaining to net lease properties and financing for net lease properties. I'd like to thank Sandy Aaron of Huntington Properties and Bobby Miller of Milco Investments for being my guest today and discussing the net lease market. Let's cut to the chase, and we'll first ask Sandy Aaron the first question here. So, Sandy, how did you get involved in the net lease arena?
Chris, thanks for inviting me this morning. In 1986, I'm reading this article about the 1031 exchange code.
Okay.
And I'm rereading the article, and I read it again. I turned to my associates and said, this is going to be our new sales model.
So, Sandy, what did you do before you were doing the net lease properties?
For the last 30 years, I've worn a couple different hats. I'm a merchant developer of multi-tenant and single-tenant properties.
Uh-huh.
Of late, I've been focused on multi-tenant retail, signature locations at the front door to master plan communities and adjoining power centers and the like. The other hat that we wear is we're in the brokerage business of selling product to 1031 exchange buyers, single-tenant, multi-tenant product, and our focus has been primarily in the Texas market.
Gotcha. And Bob Miller, how did you get involved in the net lease arena?
Chris, thank you again for inviting me as well. I started somewhat through a different format than Sandy. I started in 1994 working with an auctioneer who had done a lot of auctions for the RTC and FDIC at HUD, and we represented a lot of institutional clients. And I started off listing apartment properties and properties that took, quite frankly, quite a bit of time to show and find your buyer. I found it as somewhat of an inefficient way of selling real estate, and I thought it was going to limit the quantity of real estate that I could sell. Mm-hmm. I live in Chicago, where coincidentally Walgreens is based, and there's quite a few Walgreens developers here locally in Chicago, and started introducing myself to them one by one and started brokering their deals, and found that just a much more efficient way of selling properties. The single-tenant retail net lease, you could show somebody the lease terms of a property, they could drive by the Walgreens or the Starbucks, the Blockbuster, and determine if they liked the location. This is before the email days and before it was so convenient to put together an aerial. You had to go hire a company to fly it and label it yourself. But it was still a more efficient way of selling a larger quantity of real estate. Our firm, the engine to our company is the brokerage of commercial real estate with a focus on freestanding single-tenant net leases, locally, regionally, and nationally, locally being Chicago, regionally the Midwest, although we've had some high-profile assignments, such as we sold the largest Walgreens property in the country on Las Vegas Boulevard for a fund out of New York to a fund based in Los Angeles. But really, I stumbled into the net lease market as a matter of convenience.
I see. Yeah, Marabella, we got involved in it through Safeway stores. My father started the company back in 1970, and at that time, Safeway was expanding, and so we were purchasing their stores as principals, and then we were holding on to them and creating long-term leases. So our second question here is for Sandy. In your opinion, Sandy, what are the best credits at this time for the net lease market? What are the most, solvent credits that are expanding that would give a 1031 buyer a good solvent company with a lot of different options as far as leases?
I have to break that down into two categories, the single-tenant product versus the multi-tenant product. The single-tenant product, I would rank in the Walgreens, the CVS for the drugstore product, Wachovia, Chase Bank for some of the bank product. I could name a number of banks that are very active.
I apologize, Chris.
Go ahead, Sandy.
Chili's Restaurant, Jack in the Box. From the multi-tenant side, Sally Beauty, GNC, Shoe Show, GameStop, and many more.
So there's quite a few to choose from. So the main ones, though, are like the Walgreens, CVS, Wachovia. A lot of the banks seem to be expanding. Any credit tenant that you pretty much see out there that's expanding, that's kind of what you're looking at?
Absolutely.
And, Bobby, the question, I guess we lost you there for a second. The question is, what are the credit tenants that you like at this time that a 1031 buyer that can get involved with that has a good credit and that would give the buyer a lot of different alternatives as far as their leases are concerned?
I believe, I mean, the majority of the credit tenants that are out there today, credit, being the operative word, are certainly the drugstores with CVS and Walgreens still expanding at a rapid pace, and the banks, Chase, TCF, Citibank, Fifth Third, I'm sure there's a number of different banks in Sandy's market as well that are expanding that are probably considered, between the banks and the drugstores, the top credits, retail tenants, at least in the retail sector. There are lesser credits, such as the Advanced Autos and AutoZones, and Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts, that still trade very aggressively also. You used the word alternative, and I think that's a very key word, mm-hmm. because many of these properties, while all investors do not evaluate it from this perspective, one of the things we preach to our lenders, to our buyers, to our sellers, is alternative use. And that one day the Walgreens won't be there, and the bank won't be there, and the Starbucks won't be there, and the Chili's won't be there. And what is the alternative use of that real estate? And really it comes down to, did you buy a good piece of real estate, and can you duplicate that revenue stream? Starbucks, which I think, trade at a ridiculously aggressive rate given what they offer to the investor, offers a 10-year lease, where the other deals that I mentioned, the drugstores and the banks, offer 20- and 30-year terms. And typically their rent is double market. And, God forbid Starbucks goes out of business to the investor who Sandy and I broker these properties to, I think they're going to have a very difficult time replacing that revenue stream, whereas a lot of the ground lease products like the banks and the Dunkin' Donuts, provide that investor a great insurance policy that if and when that tenant does leave, their rents are, well below market for the rent that they may have to duplicate or increase at the time that they have to find an alternative use. But the credit tenants are really the drugstores, the banks, and some of the QSR restaurants, such as Yum.
For the financing, we're seeing the same thing. We like the Walgreens, the CVS, because they have that, they're investment grade. Most of them are, I think, what is CVS, triple B rated? Is that correct? I think they are triple B, and then Walgreens is A rated.
They trade in a similar fashion, though. They may have a lesser rating than Walgreens, but the 1031 investor, I think, pays the same low 6 cap in today's market for CVS that.
Uh-oh, I think we lost Bob again. Sandy, you want to pick it up where he was talking? Do you have any comments?
I'm here, Chris,
on that?
I'm here.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Bob.
I hear it. The drugstore, I think that the marketplace does not differentiate the CVS and the Walgreens product from the cap rate as much as their credit may differ. That's not to say that they shouldn't, and in certain cases they don't, but a well-located CVS will trade at the same rate as a well-located Walgreens in most cases, I've found.
See, we have the 10-year note at about, 452, I believe it's around 452. What do you see for both of you for cap rates as far as the Walgreens and CVS stores? And have you ever looked into the spread between, where the Walgreens and CVS deals are done and versus the 10-year note?
Sandy, I can take it, or you can take it, or we probably have both a similar answer.
What are you seeing for cap rates for Walgreens deals at this time, Sandy?
Well, our firm, Huntington Properties, we're continuing to ring the bell with about 100 transactions a year. We'll finish off this year again with another 100 sales. The preponderance of those will be in single tenant. the buffet of products that we will have in that single tenant arena will be everything from the product types we've talked about, the drugstore category, the bank category, the fast food, a lot of ground leases. We're seeing in Texas a lot of ground leases in the last 2 or 3 years. So the cap rates that we have consistently solid, we have been working with as low as 5% cap rate.
So 5, okay, and so that would be about, if we're so that's a 50% basis point over the about the 10-year note right now.
Below.
And
right.
And the high side of that same product we've seen as high as 6.25. On the multi-tenant retail, a little bit different animal, have to take into some factors of a little vacancy reserve, and we're seeing as low as a 6% cap rate to as high as a 7.75 cap rate. Let me just clarify that that is new retail, not second generation or redeveloped retail. That's new retail, typically under 50,000 square feet.
Okay. Bob, what are you seeing as far as cap rates? Are you seeing kind of the same thing?
We haven't gotten as low as 5. You know, we've gotten, you know, 5.25. Sandy has an advantage. You know, while we sell property throughout the country and have sold property in Texas, you know, Sandy does, sounds like the majority of his work in Texas. Texas, if you remember, is a no income tax state. And states like Texas and Nevada and Florida are very attractive to investors who can avoid an additional, you know, tax percentage on what income they make. But, you know, on the drugs, you know, the drugstores and the banks, the drugstores were not, you know, were seen rarely trade below 6, although in California they do from time to time. But, you know, rarely will they trade right now north of 6.25 on the new triple net lease Walgreen properties, or even the CVSs for that matter, unless there's a package, a bulk deal. The banks are trading, you know, anywhere between 5.5 and 5.75, and depending upon, you know, how excellent the location is, you know, perhaps a little below 5.5. You know, we've traded several banks this year and are trading, you know, several right now. One has a $400,000 rent on it with the Bank of America deal. And, you know, that sort of is a higher rent that, you know, is attracted to, you know, while there's plenty of investors that can afford it, you know, it's not your $90,000 to $150,000 ground rent that is attracted, you know, that attracts to a larger marketplace. The QSR and fast food restaurants, we're seeing franchises, you know, with limited credit trade between 6.75 and 7.25. And the credit tenants, the Yums and the Dunkin' Donuts and the Starbucks, trade in the lower 6s. And on the ground leases, we just traded a Dunkin' Donuts at a 5.5 cap.
Just to stop you there for a second, and this is a question for both of you guys, what is your opinion of the franchisee fast food deals? Do you like those? Do you think there could be issues, you know, down the road? I know for a long time there, when I first got in the business in the early 90s, not many people were doing those. Most of the people were buying credit, you know, corporate leases, and those franchise deals in the last, I would say, 3 years have become really popular because there's not many, as many corporate deals that are smaller.
Sandy, if you let me start off, coincidentally, our firm recently purchased a significant interest in a restaurant company that is the 9th largest Arby's roast beef franchisee in the country, and just purchased the exclusive Dunkin' Donut franchise rights to all of northern Indianapolis. Now, the engine to our company is commercial net lease brokerage with a focus on freestanding net lease single-tenant retail properties. But we have to invest our money somewhere, just like everybody else, and started brokering a lot of retail restaurant franchise properties. And through doing that, met a couple operators we became comfortable with. I think that they are risk overall, and I think that they are very risky investments. I mentioned Starbucks pays double rent. For you to go out and buy a new property and build a single-tenant freestanding restaurant property today in almost any market USA, certainly the top 20 majors, you're going to be all into that deal, not including the fixtures and equipment, for at least $1.3 million, $1.4 million. The investor is going to charge, the developer is going to charge the tenant 10% on that, which is somewhere between $130,000 and $140,000 rent, 2,800 square foot building. You back into a rent per square foot on that, and the life capacity of these buildings that you're building, it doesn't add up. So you're really betting on the quality of the operator. The reason that the franchisee restaurant deals have really become available in the abundance that they have, there's a multiple reasons. One, because there's not a lot, you know, the availability of the credit properties on the market is lesser and they're very expensive. Secondly, a lot of franchisees have been coming to term on their franchise agreements with their respective franchisors, in order to renew their franchise agreements, require them to renovate their existing restaurants, of which they have plenty. They don't have a lot of cash, and the sale leaseback, combined with the attractive cap rates that the market is paying right now, is a very easy way to finance a renovation or take money off the table. And that is, you know, one of the reasons you've seen so many of these on the market. But you really need to check the quality of the operator. And is that guy going to be in business 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? Is he going to be able to be in business through his lease term? Is it, you know, what type of properties does he have and what are you buying? So I think they're very risky investments, yet I'm sure Sandy and I are both, you know, selling an abundance of them, and that's our business, and hopefully the buyers, you know, understand the risk involved with that type of investment. Sorry to be long-winded.
Sandy, do you have anything to say about the franchise leases?
You know, someone gave me some wise advice a number of years ago, and they said you need to step back and not take an analytical position on behalf of the buyer, because you have no sense of what the depth of their investment strategy might be. And I really have just come to coin the phrase that we're nothing more than bond brokers that happen to be selling bonds that have a hard asset attached to it called real estate. We have found that for a minimum of 100 basis points higher, we'll watch people come in and buy non-credit, single-tenant asset entities and not think twice about it. Yes, there's some thought given to the real estate, but I would say that the preponderance of those specific transactions that we do, 50% of those people ever come to look at the real estate.
Would you say they're primarily yield driven, Sandy? They'll take 100. They'll take a better spread of their money and compromise the credibility of the tenant, the length of the lease term, the location of the property, simply for the better yield.
Absolutely.
And Sandy's right. A lot of them, they don't even come and look at, which is amazing.
So they don't even see the real estate?
Many don't.
Right.
Most do, but
do you advise that if they don't, like a lot of the leases, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the leases aren't completely triple net, so they may at some point, if it's a double net lease, they may have to replace the roof or, you know, do something to the building. Isn't that correct?
I think most of the restaurant properties that we've sold are absolute triple net. I think the biggest risk is, quite frankly, you know, how long can your tenant pay you rent, and if they can't, can you duplicate that revenue stream? In Florida, where we've sold a decent amount of restaurant properties, I can tell you, you know, the hurricane, we sold a package of Pizza Huts in Fort Myers and Naples, and prior to the hurricane season in 2005, and I can tell you that I think four of those properties got destroyed by the hurricane and never rebuilt. And I think the franchisee could have rebuilt them if he wanted, but I think the insurance proceeds might have been too attractive versus rebuilding the restaurant and operating it. So it's amazing how many of the restaurant properties sell and how risky of an investment it may be. And I agree with Sandy. You know, maybe we shouldn't analyze these buyers as much as I do. But I can't believe that many of them just don't even bother getting on a plane to look at the property.
Sandy, are you seeing a lot of double net deals out there where the landlord has obligations, or are most of your deals triple net? And do you always advise, you know, a buyer to look at the lease and see what he's got?
The majority of the leases, I would say in the 90% level, we see is what we interpret as triple net. But
can you give us your definition of triple net? Because I've heard different caveats to that, what double and triple net is.
Well, you can take it even one step further and take it to a bond lease where no matter what happens to the property, the rent check is coming for the term, end of story. We rarely see those anymore. Probably the last time I saw those type of leases was probably eight years ago. The majority of the leases that we've seen in the last 8 to 10 years are what you and I would define as triple net. It is where all the expenses are passed through. There are some carve-outs in some specific leases where there is reliability back to the insurance policy or back to the warranty on the roof. The very few double nets fall more into that lower credit level or a little bit more aged product. And when I say aged, I'm only going back a couple years. We all forgot, but Walgreens, that's all they did was a double net, and you were responsible for roof and structure.
And capital improvements in the parking lot.
And capital improvements in the parking lot. So, you know, we sort of have seen that transition take place. And again, from the ground leases, well, it's a non-issue with regards to triple net.
I've seen some buyers come into me to finance some of the Walgreens and some of the older properties. And there's certain buyers, they really like those older properties with maybe 10 to 15 years remaining in the lease and some landlord obligations. Are you seeing that as well, that certain buyers, because you get, you know, normally a little bit higher cap rate than something that's a brand new Walgreens deal?
The investors that are looking for that type of product, you know, again, to each his own. I think that the investor that is looking for an opportunity to create value at some point in the lease will look for an older property where the rent is not as expensive as it is in today's market. And in the event that that tenant does leave, they have an ability to increase the revenue stream that the current product is providing. So I think there's a good amount of those investors out there. They're typically younger investors, in my experience. When I say younger, I don't mean in their 20s or 30s, but they are, you know, an investor more willing to take risks, put some elbow grease to the property, and perhaps they're, you know, in their 40s to 50s. The investors that are looking for the secure bond, extremely passive investments, are typically tax-deferred exchangers who are selling property and just looking to trade and sit back and not have any worry in the world but to get their rent passed. The real estate on through their estates or their heirs at some point, but I think there's a good amount who are looking for property with lesser lease term in good real estate locations that perhaps they have the event to create value at some point in time.
Sandy, do you have anything to say about that?
We're really more of a round peg and a round hole philosophy. We defined our sales model is that we're only going after new product, defined as maybe a year to a year and a half burned off the primary term. So I don't know that I could speak intelligently as to what that second tier of that older product really offers or what the profile of that buyer is all about.
Right. Back when we first got in the business in 1970, most of the deals that you saw out there were companies that were doing sale leasebacks rather than a 1031 guy buying from a local area developer that such as Sandy does, and I think you do quite a bit of that, Bobby. What is the reason for that phenomena that we've gone from, you know, corporations controlling the whole sale leaseback process to, you know, local area developers signing a lease with the tenants and then selling that real estate to third-party exchange guys. And we'll start with Sandy on that question.
You're building a workforce. These companies, Walgreens, for example. You know, we keep picking on them, but that's a good example. Their philosophy was that we want to own a market outside of their home base, and we need a workforce to help us get there and as quickly as we can. They chose to go that direction. Jack in the Box, on the flip side, has hired the people for hourly wages, brought them in on a staff basis, and assembled them throughout the United States or throughout the markets that they're in, and they created their own rollout program and then created their own sale-leaseback formula. And, you know, we have a company based here in Texas, EasyPond, EasyCorp.
Okay.
They did their own rollout. They woke up one day, called us. They said we had 45 properties. Set up your lemonade stand. We want you to sell these to the 1031 market. So we literally started selling these off for them. With that sale to the market as opposed to the REIT or the trust, they were able to save a couple hundred basis points, restructured their short-term debt, which allowed them, burned their short-term debt, restructured their long-term debt, and if you were to pick up a newspaper today and look at their stock price versus where it was when we started this program, my biggest mistake was I didn't buy 100,000 shares of their stock back then. But we've seen a need, at least a perception need from these corporations, that they need the workforce to help them grow in a marketplace that they don't want. You know, everything's real time today, okay? Everybody wants immediate gratification. These guys want to grow their business and have immediate buying power on the ground.
Do you think more companies should be extracting cash out of their real estate, Bobby, by doing, you know, using local area developers and doing
Pardon me, Chris?
What's that?
Pardon me?
I said, do you think more corporations such as, you know, there's already the Walgreens, the Advanced Auto. Is there room for more corporations to be doing sale leasebacks or extracting money out of their real estate to expand?
Absolutely. I think it's in today's market where the cap rates are where they are and doesn't seem to be slowing down significantly anytime soon. I think it's an excellent vehicle for companies to finance their expansion. They can borrow money still, to expand their workforce, to expand their infrastructure at lower rates than, you know, they ever could, you know, for some time. And the ability to then take that money and, build their own real estate at whatever it costs them and then sell it at a 6 cap, 7 cap. If they do it themselves versus third-party developers doing it, they can take advantage of that spread. For instance, most restaurant companies trade at, let's say, 5 times revenue or five times what they're making. So if a restaurant company makes $10 million a year, that's going to trade on the market for a neighborhood of $50 million. So for every $10,000 that they're making, that's $50,000 in value. And if you take that $10,000 and divide it by a 7 cap, I don't have my calculator in front of me, but I think it's about $130,000, $140,000 in value versus the $50,000 they get when they sell it. Now, the trick is, if you can follow me here, that $140,000 less the $50,000 is a spread of $90,000. What can they do with the difference of that $90,000 during the time frame between that they did the sale leaseback and they sell their company? How can they reinvest it in their company to make more money on that money versus not doing this at least back at all and taking advantage of today's market? So I think it's an excellent way to finance the expansion of a company and reinvest money back into your company to make more money on that to continue to reinvest.
Okay. I'd like to thank both of you today for participating in this for our first teleseminar, and I hope we can do more of these. Maybe the next one we can do a live one. Sandy, how can a client out there that's looking to buy a net lease deal contact you? What's the easiest way, and what should they, what kind of information should they bring you to, you know, when they come in, so that you can find the right fit for them?
Well, Chris, again, thanks for inviting me today. It was informative hearing Bobby's thoughts. I look forward to interfacing with him in the future, and as well as your company. Two ways to get in touch with us. 1-800-357-1031.
What's your website? Do you have a website where people can access the various properties that you're marketing?
We do, and I welcome your listeners to come tour our site. It's hpiproperties.com. Let me repeat that, hpiproperties.com. And what they'll be able to view is these various products that we talked about, the single tenant, the multi-tenant, and then there will be a lease feature and a management feature that we also offer for those who are looking for those type of services in the Texas market.
Do you cooperate with other brokers?
Absolutely.
I take it you do.
Absolutely. We have probably, it always amazes me how a buyer always has an Uncle Fred or an Aunt Millie or somebody who has a license. And we're more into ringing the bell. Our philosophy is we want to rack up as many transactions as we can, and if it's sharing the fees on a heads-up basis with the marketplace, so be it. Because I am a merchant developer and I have my own product on our website as well, we do not participate in that product. So we afford an opportunity for the brokers. And there's a number of firms out there who are a little bit more rigid in their process, that if they don't have the lion's share of those fees, then they won't work on those types of properties. So we want to leave it open so that we're not, for lack of better words, we're not discriminating or limiting our marketplace.
Right. Bob, how can a 1031 buyer looking to buy a net lease deal contact you and let us know your telephone number and what your website is so that they can get on there and take a look at what you got?
Our firm's website is www.millco, M as in Mary, I-L-L-C-O, investments, investments.com. We have an 800 number at 800-416-2424. We're based in Chicago, Illinois. Our sales are national, and we also cooperate with brokers to contact us. I think that it is a extremely necessary avenue to not ignore in marketing real estate, and the brokerage firms that do not cooperate with brokers or make it difficult to cooperate are really doing their clients a disservice, because there is a tremendous ocean of buyers out there, and not one brokerage firm could possibly be in contact with every one of the buyers in the country or in, you know, that exists, and we absolutely cooperate with brokers. We don't like getting taken advantage of, I will say, when someone's trying to cooperate with us who we feel is not a broker or a buyer, you know, wants to take half of our fee just because he's simply a buyer. We do take exception to that, but we cooperate, you know, have no problem, never have, with cooperating with brokers who are bringing buyers to the table and assisting in the transaction.
Great. Both Sandy and Bob, I'd love to arrange financing for any of your buyers that are looking for financing for the Walgreens, the CVS, the Jack in the Box, 7-Eleven, AutoZone, Advanced Auto, Family Dollar, any of those. I'd love to take a run at them, and that's all we do is arrange financing. We don't really do sales, and a lot of people tell us that's a good thing because they don't want to really bring deals that are not in contract to somebody that also does sales. So to anybody out there looking for financing, my company, Marabella Commercial Finance, you can contact us directly at 760-479-4000. 800. Again, our number is 760-479-0800. If you don't reach us there, you can always try me on my cell phone, 760-803-6464. And our website, you can get the current estimated rates. We have average cap rates on there. We also have my video market update and other information. That address is www.marabellafinance.com. Before we end here, I want to do a little disclosure. All the opinions mentioned on the video, this video or this teleseminar, the opinions of Sandy Aaron and Bobby Miller only, and Marabella Commercial Finance does not endorse these opinions. All buyers of net lease properties should have their attorney, CPA, and an insurance agent review the lease and all documents involved in a net lease transaction. And all the cap rates, rates, terms are subject to change without notice. So, again, I want to thank you both. Have a great week, and hopefully we can do this again. Thanks again to Sandy Aaron of Huntington Properties and Bob Miller Milko.
Chris, thank you very much for arranging this. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you, Bobby.
Bye-bye. Sandy, nice meeting you. I'd love to talk to you.
Likewise.